Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.
This Saturday is the National Day of Thanksgiving. It's a chance for us all to put our gratitude into action.
Absolutely, absolutely it is. And there's so many great ways we can do that, big and small. And the man, I guess, who can set it up for us and who knows all that's going on is Brian Pickering, who heads up the whole great concept that is the Thanksgiving Day. Good morning to you, Brian.
Good morning, Aaron. Good morning, Helen. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Set up for us how this all started as well. How did we come about with this idea of a Thanksgiving Day?
It started in the hearts of ordinary people who shared an idea with us, and we took it to other leaders, who eventually we took it to the Governor-General, and he said, look, that sounds a great idea to me. Why don't we establish a day of Thanksgiving in our nation where we can celebrate our Christian heritage and promote the values that make our nation great?
So what sort of things do people do on Thanksgiving Day?
Whole range of things from, where sometimes up, particularly up in Queensland in Townsville, they have a great neighbour-to-neighbour program where they organise hundreds of volunteers from across the churches to go out and do acts of kindness, especially for people who are disadvantaged and disabled, go and clean their houses, clean their yards up, do all that sort of thing, to formal breakfasts or morning teas in police stations, hospitals, schools, all those sorts of things. Then we get down to individuals who can send cards or ribbons to say thank you to people who have done something for them in their life in the last 12 months. So it can be celebrated at a macro level, if you like, with churches combining together, or it can be celebrated by an individual who just wants to say thank you to some friends.
There's been some great endorsements for this as well. A number of high-profile people have jumped on board and saying, we should do this, this is a great idea.
Each year we get endorsements from the Governor-General, the Prime Minister, the Leader of the Opposition. Church leaders have endorsed it. So, yes, we're fortunate that we have a lot of high-profile people who are encouraging Australians to see this as a day of thanksgiving and gratitude, thanking God and thanking each other.
Well, thanksgiving.org.au is the website if you want to get more information. Thank you so much for your time, Brian.
Thanks, Aaron.
Thanksgiving.org.au. And we'll help you out a little bit to say thank you here.
Yeah, what we'd love to do this week, just a couple of times every morning, we'd love you to give us a call if there's somebody that we can help you say thank you to. We'll write in a card, slip a couple of tickets to the movies in there, and we'll pass on your thanks from us as well. So what do you reckon? Is there somebody you'd like us to send a card to on your behalf?
Yeah, let us know. 1-300-40-2020. Susanna wants to thank somebody on her behalf this morning. G'day, Susanna. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Excellent.
So, Susanna, who are you appreciating?
I never got the chance to actually say thank you to him because my pastor's very busy. And I'd just like to say thank you for all that he do. I actually don't know how much he do. I know that he do much more than what we can see.
Mm-hmm.
So I just want to say thank you for all that he do and his wife, Bobby.
Beautiful.
All right. We will send out a card and also some movie tickets to your pastor. Fantastic. Done. Easy as that. Thank you, Susanna. And all this week, we'll be thanking people on your behalf.
Yep.
So that's great. Good on you.
Great. We'll get those tickets in the mail. And we're going to be doing this all week. If you want any more information about the National Day of Thanksgiving, it's up on our Facebook page, Aaron and Helen on Facebook. Will and Kate appears they've got home from the royal honeymoon, started unwrapping the gifts, starting on the thank you cards and all of that.
Very nice.
And
I guess the grandmother-in-law is sitting there, as in, Kate's grandmother-in-law sitting there writing the list. So who's on the card? Is that? And one will write this down now. Yeah, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
Someone's got to write the list. Someone's got to keep the list accurate so you know who to thank who for.
You're so right.
Yes.
You're so right. Well, they've got 26 charities that they'd nominated instead of getting physical gifts.
Yep.
And so they've done the tally. $1.52 million came in as gifts that'll now be distributed to those.
You'll need a few more people to write that list down. That's a bit tricky. Prince Philip might have to help.
Maybe the corgis are going to need to get their fangs around a biro too.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Good on them. And that's, look, good use from all that that pomp and ceremony and that lovely the whole thing, to a really good side of that as well, that people really benefit
and
from
Australia
that.
Australia might end up turning a profit because we gave the $25,000, but now the Royal Flying Doctor Service is one of the nominated charities who might, if that's the tally divided by 26, few quick sums, we're coming out way in front.
What did we give?
$25,000, wasn't it?
Did we? Why? Just as a, like, a present?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
We're nice like that. Remind me to invite Australia to my wedding.
Yeah, that's... Absolutely. In Sydney at the moment, it's expensive to park. But
really?
It is, yes, it's so expensive that in some cases it's cheaper just to cop the fine than it is to pay for a few hours in a car park.
Oh.
There are some car parks in Sydney that it's $89 to park for more than 3 hours. $89!
Are you serious?
Yes. But a fine is $86.
Is there a bank out the front so you can stop in and get a second mortgage before you go in?
I think you'd need it. But it's $86 is a fine, apparently, for going past the meter and, I guess, whatever you put in the meter in the first place. Mm-hmm. But it's just to the ridiculous point. There is
staggering.
No point. The street parking, so it's impossible to find a park anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go into those car parks, which are so expensive, and the spots are so teeny. They're so teeny, tiny, teeny. Even those little tiny cars have trouble getting into them. It's just,
if you didn't
you
drive one
door?
Of those big armoured trucks, though, you'd be all right.
Yeah, that's right. If it didn't have my Hummer.
Aaron, I had some serious kitchen dramas last week with my porridge.
Yeah, you made quite a mess.
I did. One day I overcooked it and it erupted and made a huge lot of goop all over the microwave I had to clean up. And so the next day I completely overcompensated, didn't cook it long enough, and I was there chewing on the oats. It was pretty bad. Today,
I guess it's oats jerky, you could call it.
Oh.
There's a market in that. Anyway, sorry, continue.
I don't know that there is. Seriously, after having to chew on that. But today... Perfect porridge.
Good work.
I think I know how Goldilocks must have felt.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice.
I don't think I'd be willing to commit any break and enter over it or anything.
No.
But it was good porridge.
Absolutely.
I Am is a movie hitting our DVD shelves and coming out of the Hope 103.2 prize cupboard this week. I Am is the name of the main character in the film, follows him going around LA helping people as they face up to the consequences of some bad decisions. It's been dubbed a faith-based crash, if you saw that Oscar winner a few years back. And we're talking to the writer-director of the film, John Ward. Good morning, John.
Good morning. How are you?
So, John, you've been in showbiz since you were 12. How did that journey start?
Yeah, just a crazy ride. It's just one of those things. When I was a little boy, Drew, it kind of dates me a little bit, but Drew Barrymore had just done E.T. And I live in Southern California now, but I grew up in North Carolina on the East Coast of the U.S. and sleepy little town. And they brought a movie, so it was kind of a big deal. And my mother, who's kind of like a modern-day Scarlett O'Hara, decided she was going to get discovered at a big cattle call.
Uh-huh.
She goes in, drags my little sister, and lo and behold, they pluck my little sister out of the crowd, put her on an elevator, send her up. Next thing she knows, she's in a hotel suite. She's face-to-face with little 8-year-old Drew Barrymore.
Oh, wow.
And they're the Prince and the Pauper. They look exactly the same. And my sister became Drew's photo double, and they became BFFs, and next thing you know, Drew wound up making 3 movies in my little town, and she kind of became somewhere between a sister and a cousin, I guess you'd say, and next thing you knew, I was a kid actor in Hollywood.
Incredible. Do you still keep in touch with her these days?
Yeah, we do. She's great. Since Christmas card. I have really small little children. She, you know, sends them cards and things like that. She's really cool.
That's lovely.
Well, yeah. From there, I guess, where did the biz take you?
Well, it's just been a wild ride. You know, show business, you're very much, you're like a ship at sea with no engine and no sail. You're just kind of riding the tide. It's been a fascinating ride. I went from there. I became a teen actor and just did a bunch of teen films in the late 80s and early 90s. And then I went to college. And funny story, my first year, I'm walking through in their big green courtyards, and I noticed that they had these classes where most of the people in there sitting in these little circles were really pretty girls. And there'd be like one guy, a teacher, and I turned to my friend and I said, "Hey, what's that all about?" And he says, "Oh, that's Shakespeare. You don't want to do that." I said, "The heck I don't." And so I got into Shakespeare, and I like to say I joined that to fall in love, and I did, and I fell in love with literature, and I really got into writing and directing. And so when I would work as a as a kid, I would actually take the script and I would make a little shot list on the side because I knew I wanted to be a director, and I would say, you know, how would I direct this scene? And then I would see how the director directed the scene. And at lunch, I would always kind of sit with him at his table, and I would say, you know, well, why did you shoot it this way? Or and some of them liked that, and some of them didn't, but I really learned on the job. And I knew that I wanted to really be a storyteller, and from there I went into went to work at a company called Lakeshore Entertainment. They did Million Dollar Baby and Runaway Bride, a bunch of films like that. And then from there, I just, while I was in, you know, I was working on the Paramount lot, and God just kept speaking to me every day. As I would drive in Hollywood through those big black gates, which really, I'll be honest with you, is pretty cool. the big black gates open and you drive in, and I would, and God would just speak to me and say, you know, why don't you take me to work? That's it. Just that simple little question. Why don't you take me to work? You take me everywhere else, but you don't take me to work. And that, you know, haunted me, and I would argue with God, and I would say, well, does a butcher take you to work, God? You know? And eventually, I just said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And that's when we made I Am.
Wow. I've read you quoted as saying you wanted this film, I Am, to start a conversation. What do you hope it gets people talking about?
You know, a lot of faith-based movies, that's really what propelled me into it. I would watch a lot of faith-based movies, and out of respect for them, you know, most of these people are people who don't make movies for a living. They just are. They just have a passion to tell God's story. But I kind of felt like, in a lot of ways, these films are preaching to the choir. You know, so if you're already a Christian, you get it, and you say, "Wow, that's great." But I wanted to make a movie that you could show to a friend. Every one of us has someone in your life that struggles with issues of faith, that's turned off to God for whatever reason. Usually, ironically, it's never God who turns them off. It's someone else in God's name who turns them off, but that's a whole nother conversation. And I wanted to create a film that you could show to that family member or that good friend or that person at work and not be creepy or weird them out or start an argument, but start a conversation. So a movie that meets them where they are, that simply just asks some questions. What if God isn't what and who you think he is? What if God actually doesn't really care what you've done? He loves you either way. What if that were true, would that change your mind? And that's really all the only question the movie asks.
It's a big ask, the Ten Commandments. I mean, a couple of years ago, there was the animation, the Charlton Heston one. What's the angle and what's the take on it that you've got?
Well, what we did was we made it to modern day. So it's 10 different people in Los Angeles. And ironically, you know, what do you guys call the big freeways in Oz? We call them freeways here. You might call them highways, or I'm not sure what you call it.
But, they both work.
But, yeah, so the biggest freeway that runs through the middle of L.A. is it's called the 10 Freeway. And I thought, now that's ironic. So we have 10 different people, total strangers, whose lives intersect around this 10 freeway that runs right through the heart of the city. And they're all different kinds of types of people. And they each are living out the 10 Commandments one by one, but not knowing it. So we all live the 10 Commandments every day. We struggle with all the issues of them. The issues of the 10 Commandments are the issues of human existence, you know. And so they're unknowingly grappling with the commandments, but each of them is visited by this person, the same person. But he meets with them, he kind of visits with them in the private moments wherever they are. For some person, it might be in their apartment. For another, it might be at the bar. For another, it might be in the gym. But wherever they tend to be alone, this person is always there kind of talking to them and with them. And some of these people, you know, are nasty types, but he's always there. And it's really the big metaphor where we wanted to take the Ten Commandments into our lives right now. This is what the Ten Commandments look like now, as opposed to swords and sandals and, you know, Red Seas parting and goats and golden calves and things like that.
Mm-hmm. John Ward, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you putting the story together and giving us a chance to give some away this week. Thanks a lot.
No, thank you. Thanks, guys.
Breakfast with Aaron and Helen, 5 to 9 weekdays on Hope 103.2.